One game this week, the home defeat by Salford. Last week, Salford fan, one up front, says, fourth game in a row where we've surprised teams playing Route 1 and getting a result. Jonathan Ditt thought it was an annoying defeat to an annoying team with an annoying manager and an annoying striker scoring a hat-trick. Darren Stevens listened to the commentary and says, just when you think you've cracked football, it kicks you in the teeth. Ben Benson is not surprised to see Robinson produce a team full of the dark arts with a big centre-forward. Daniel Stokoe felt we massively missed O'Riordan, as Smith wouldn't have scored two of his goals with him in the team. Neil Hulse thinks we didn't get to grips with Smith all game, we got what we deserved. Nathan Yeomans says we can't use O'Riordan's absence as an excuse, they were too physical and too strong. Chris Mason says we were undone by football from yesteryear and an aerial bombardment, with Rob Murray seeing Salford being too physical, cynical and strong. We had too many below the high standards we've set. Joe said we didn't deal with them across the board. We have to respond well. H. Robinson saw a poor 40 minutes, but had a decent spell in the second half. We chucked away the points with shoddy defending. Connor thought we made some good chances in the second half, but we made it easy for them for 70 minutes by hoofing it. David thought the only time we played measured football rather than hit and hope, we scored. Graham Miles thought it was poor today, didn't really get going, played into their hands with too much long ball. Trevor Griffiths didn't see enough play through the thirds. We played into Salford's hands. We can't argue with the result. Lewis agrees. We didn't know how to handle their physicality. It was a very poor performance. James wasn't sure what the plan was and says Lee Bell has to shoulder his share of the blame for the defeat. Andrew Bamforth is already missing Connor, whilst Andrew Napper is reminiscing about Kevin Francis. Dave Gallagher thought it was a poor performance where we've missed getting into the automatic playoff spots. After losing O'Riordan and White, it's important we respond against Tranmere. Captain Britton has seen enough of Offord to think he's better in midfield. Nothing done about O'Riordan's replacement. Even Sass Davis would have been better. Greg agrees, we need Offord in midfield. We sorely missed his bite in the middle. Adebisi was the only one who came out of it with any credit, according to Rory. Hopefully just a blip against a team with a new manager bounce. Defunkster thinks it's better to get these results out of the way now than when they really matter. Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Rare Women podcast. We have just got the one game this week, the disappointing home defeat to Salford. To go through that game, our panel today is Mark Birtles. Hello, Mark.
Hello, everybody.
Steve Bennett. Hello, Steve.
Hello, everybody.
And Adam Turner. Hello, Adam.
Hello, everybody.
Adam, I'm going to start with you because on Saturday evening after the game, you sent me a text when we were sorting out times for this. You said, I came on after the Grimsby game for my debut. I'm coming on for my second appearance after this game. Maybe this should be the last game you come on. So we'll put all the blame on you, I suppose.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on for the second and last time.
Let's start then with the news that was, I think it was Thursday. It was after I'd gone to sleep. They announced it quite late, Mark. Connor O'Riordan in the least surprising transfer move of all time. It seemed like it had been going on for 3 weeks, finally made that move to Blackburn.
Yeah, it was the worst kept secret in football, I think. It's been on the card since sometime in December. It's what we do, isn't it? It's a blow, but it's what we do. When you think back to the players that we've sold in the past, you know, like Seth Johnson, Danny Murphy, Dean Ashton, with the greatest respect in the world, we've lost more impressive players than Conor O'Riordan. So we'll recover, we'll come back again. In the context of this season, it's a blow. But it's also worth mentioning, I think, that even though this move has been on the card since sometime in December, the way that he's conducted himself and played has been absolutely immense and says everything you could say about the lad. And I wish him nothing but the best for the future.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there and basically sort of reiterate what Mark said there, that It is what we do, isn't it? And it's called being a Crewe fan, unfortunately. But if you're having a good season, you get to Christmas and you're looking over your shoulders. I think the real horrible bit about it for us is that release clause, isn't it? And the continuing influence that Mr. Artell's dealings had or has had upon the club. I believe that that's the last one, which is a good thing, and we've just got to move on, haven't we? And we genuinely wish the guy well because, from all accounts, he's a top guy, top pro, and you can't begrudge him a move to that level. It's up two divisions, isn't it? And I'm pretty sure that he will have got a fairly significant multiple on his wages every week. So. Good luck to the guy. He could have got injured next week and never played again, couldn't he? So you can't begrudge him, can you?
Yeah, my head says the same as Mark and Steve. We had players like James Jones who had a chance to go to Preston. It didn't work out. And he never got that type of opportunity again. So really, as a footballer, you get that type of opportunity, you've got to take it. But your heart said something different. It never really gets easier when you lose a key player at a key time. It just... It still takes a bit of getting over.
My only thing with Connor O'Riordan is the fact that we didn't see him for that long, really, did we? 50 games over, what, two and a bit seasons or whatever isn't actually that much. And part of the sort of payback, if you like, is the fact that we like to, or we used to certainly, get them for a bit longer than that. And it's just a bit sad, isn't it, that, you know, he's one of ours, and yet we'll have seen him for 50 odd games, and that's football, I guess, and it moves on as we all have to.
I think that's potentially the way it's going to go, though, Steve. You know, the
key. I worry too. I think I agree with you. Yeah,
the key sales and the better sales are players that we don't see for very long. I think once they get into second contract territory, then you may be wondering if they are going to make it or if they're going to go as high as maybe the Championship. It's more going to be the league above, because you find yourself eventually in the Callum Ainley scenario, don't you?
That's exactly what I was about to respond there, that you do know, don't you, within the first 12 months or so, whether they're going to be pushing our first team and moving on upwards. And I think that's the galling thing about the whole release clause thing, is that for another few hundred quid a week, they'd have probably signed without that release clause, and what we would have paid them over the length of their contract would have been 10, 20 grand. And we've probably lost out on 20 times that, which is the galling bit. But I suppose it's, we don't know all of the machinations behind the scenes, and we don't know everything that was going on at the time, but it's, it is. You do fairly quickly, don't you, whether they're going to have a good stab at it. And otherwise you are ending up with Callum Ainley or I'm trying to think of a better example, but he is the example, isn't he, of that academy player who had all the promise but never quite made that step. He was the first of, if you remember, of that bundle of kids, the Charlie Kirk and Pixie and all of those, to come through, and yet he never quite kicked on and ended up, you know, where he is now, and playing wise, I mean. So it's one of those. We've just got to move on, haven't we?
Just to jump quickly before we finish up to the club's defence and actually the player's defence, I'm not always sure that it's the player that's asking for a release clause. You know, I think sometimes, or more often than not, it's the dreaded agent that's banging on the table that's trying to get the deal done in that way. Because I'm pretty sure, from the way that Conor O'Riordan spoke about the club, and, you know, we've all seen that picture circulated by his dad of him holding the playoff trophy, he's a Crewe fan, and I don't think he would want anything but the best for Crewe. And I can't ever imagine a position where him saying that, I'm not signing a contract unless you put a low release clause in. I think it's more down to the agents, and it's perhaps worth remembering that when we're being critical. I mean, you're right, I've heard that's the last one, and hopefully it is. But I don't think it's as straightforward sometimes as us just saying we're not putting them in anymore.
No, I absolutely agree. There's more than one factor in it, isn't there? And be those people, agents, whatever. I just, yeah, it's just difficult, isn't it, at the time? And you wonder, you see, because they're all sort of starlets within our little world. But what is their market until they've got those first team appearances with Crewe? Or the likes of Blackburn or Stoke or whoever in the Championship really queuing up for them at that age? I'm not sure they are. And I think it's their currency or their value comes from once they've got those first team appearances at 17, 18, 19. And I think that's the galling thing from our side. But I agree, there's a lot of factors and there's a lot of things at play that we may never know about, to be honest.
Just one thing on the market and the market value. So we've looked at it and we've said £500,000 feels low. But if you look at the market, it maybe isn't as low as we actually think. Camel Conte is Grimsby's star player. He's a midfielder, playmaker, makes them tick. Whether he's as good as Conor Reardon, it's difficult for him. I don't watch him. I don't know if he is, but he's a similar type of ballpark of player, 21. He's just moved to Bristol Rovers, and he moved for £300,000. So that's less than Conor moved for. And I don't believe those
are. Yeah, good point. I think we are operating in a different market to what it was even 10 years ago, aren't we? And certainly a very, very different market to the one of Danny Murphy and Seth Johnson and Dean Ashton. I don't know. Conor Reardon, the moment you see him, he's a Bentley, isn't he? He's good at everything. You know, if you want to race him, he's good. If you want the comfort, he's good. You know, sort of thing. God, that car analogy doesn't work, but you know what I mean. He's clearly very, very good, and he was from moment one, I thought. But no, it's a good point, and I'm not sure the market. I did say when I was talking about the pay them a little bit extra a week, I did say 20 or so multiples. I reckon £1 million was absolutely his ceiling, because if you look at however well we did, because if you look at those transfers over the last four or five seasons out of League Two, then I don't think there's only two or three that have gone for more than him. And, you know, some of those were goal scorers. And so it's a very different place, different marketplace to what it was even a decade ago.
Well, maybe if there's a God, Perry NG will move before the end of the window and we'll net some money. And maybe moving forward, that's perhaps where we're going to make our money on the second sale. It's a matter
of the
20 or the 25% sell on.
I'm reliably informed that Perry's 20. So, and that's on a good source. So, if he goes for 10 million or plus, which is probably what a Premier League side would play for a proven Championship centre half, then woohoo, we've done all right, haven't we?
I'm gonna stop there. My main takeaway from that, Mark, is that your belief that if there was a God, his main focus would be Perry NG being sold on from Cardiff to give Crewe a couple of £1 million sell on.
To me, then yes.
There's no bigger problems in the world than a few more pounds in the Crewe Alex club account. I think, you know, the main thing I think is that going back to where we started, I put a tweet out and I think it summed up where I felt like, whenever this happens, it makes me very proud of the fact that I support Crewe. It reminds me that we do support a small club, and it's not something we like to admit or accept, but it is the reality. These players are going to move up, especially when we're in the fourth tier. I do think this was too soon, but I do agree that I think that this is probably how it's going to be. If we're going to make money, we have to sell them sooner, I think. We didn't probably make as much as we should have done with the last batch. So it's that balancing act that the people who are paid to make the decisions have to decide when is the best time to sell them. Obviously, this one was a little bit out of its hands with the sell-on clause. But yeah, there's a lot of money potentially in Blackburn's defensive line now for Kralix in the future. I'm hoping that sort of comes to pass with both of them. I'd like to see Pixie and O'Riordan and Perry all in the Premier League at some point. Hopefully adding a few pounds to our account, as I say. We've spent about 15 minutes talking about that because we don't want to talk about the game that happened on Saturday, I imagine. The way into that, Adam, was there's obviously one change that was made with that space of O'Riordan needing to be filled. It was filled by Osterfield starting his first game and Luke Hofford dropping back into defence. Is that the best 11 that we've got now? You know, we've not had a particularly good January in terms of players we've lost, White and now O'Riordan. Is that as good as it gets for us?
I think as of today, it probably is. But I really want Luke Hofford back into midfield. I think he made such a difference in midfield. Who that means coming into centre-back, I really don't know. Lewis Billington, it's a big ask to go centre-back in a two-man defence. Is Zach Williams fit? He's never looked quite comfortable in a two-man defence either. So if we could, without being able to push Luke Hofford forward, probably is the best lineup. The only question mark on that is... Osterfield. Is Osterfield the best pick of the ones that we've got available in currently?
I thought he was a bit weak's the wrong word, but I thought he was a bit lightweight yesterday for somebody who's looks quite a physical specimen. I thought that was part of the problem yesterday, that we were just getting brushed off in midfield. There was a lot of problems yesterday, and you know, the move of Offord, I think, was a big one. I think what worried me was that we changed to accommodate how they were going to play with Smith, rather than thinking, well, we're fourth in the league or whatever we were. We're at home. We're the ones that are 1-4 on the bounce. Let them worry about us. And changing for the opposition is fine when you nullify them. But good God, we didn't, did we? We did far from nullify them, and indeed I think we helped them in pretty much every way, in the way that we changed our shape and our personnel around within that shape. And it was just disappointing, wasn't it, from minute one, two or three, in fact. Yeah.
Going back to your point, Stu, about the strongest side, this isn't my point. Trevor made it yesterday. Hi, Trevor. Bradford on New Year's Day, we're five games later. We're significantly weaker yesterday. We've got no O'Riordan and no Joe White, you know, which I think then sort of accentuates the importance of the next couple of days in terms of the transfer window, because we are significantly weaker all of a sudden from those four games that we've won, which were fantastic results. So I think, yeah, maybe yesterday was the strongest lineup. I mean, it's easy to say with hindsight, you know, you've got the option of moving Billow across as a centre-half and keeping Offord where he is, but then you're up against Matt Smith, which was always going to be difficult for whoever was against him, and that's with the benefit of hindsight. But it's me that's been saying for a while, well, if Conor O'Riordan goes, that's probably the area we're strongest in. But I think I'm like Adam, I want to keep Offord in midfield, so I think we need to look for a centre-half now and bring one in.
Yeah, we can't. We need South Cheshire Kante back in there, don't we? Because he's been so good, so good. And it almost means that you don't need to be quite as dominant from centre-halves, because he's stopping things from even developing before they do. So, yeah, it was an odd performance generally, wasn't it, yesterday?
We've talked a lot about the players then already, Offord being there at the centre-half position. They do score in the fourth minute. Adam, I'm going to try not and make this rest of the season be the question, if O'Riordan's in the team, do we concede that? So I don't really want to go down that route, but it didn't look very good as a matchup with Matt Smith and Luke Offord competing for the ball in the air. And, you know, I think that tells the story of the game, really, in a nutshell, that it was just an outmatched situation.
Yeah, I think the first goal, there was almost no blame to be attached, because you've got Luke Offord jumping against Matt Smith. It's just not a like-for-like competition. The ball was really good, perfect delivery. The header was fantastic. Nothing the keeper could really do about it. But I guess, on the other hand, we're not playing Matt Smith every week either. Not every striker is Matt Smith. Matt Smith is a unique striker, even at this level. We don't have a huge amount of Matt Smiths. And the ones we do who are tall do not all have the quality that Matt Smith has. That's his third hat trick of the season. So I think we shouldn't get overly carried away about it. I think we do need more height in the team. I think having Courtney around would help a lot because he headers a lot of balls out. And if you've not got Courtney in defence, you've not got Connor in defence for set pieces, that's when you get a big, big problem. So I think you might have to rethink the use of Courtney if we're not going to bring in a tall centre-back.
I think all of that is spot on, other than the we couldn't blame anyone. I don't think we worked hard enough to stop the cross that went into the box. I think when you watch it back, it's a bit half-arsed, the attempt. And I think, you know, if you can't handle Matt Smith, which we obviously struggle to, then stop the source and work harder to stop the balls in. And I don't think we did that very well yesterday.
No, and I don't think even the first goal was the only sort of example of that. We never got near Matt Smith, did we, all game? But no, we didn't work hard enough to stop those balls. And so that even that half a second or whatever, we got a chance to have a look up and compose themselves and deliver it basically onto his head. He won so many balls beyond the far post or on the edge of the box that thankfully didn't come to much in the end, but he was winning them. I think just going back to the goal, though, if you watch it and it, sort of watching it live, it didn't show as much on the video, but offered just not only was he is he about 6 inches shorter than the guy, he got it all wrong. Smith made one movement and offered got completely the wrong side of him and then never quite got back on the goal side of him and ended up sticking his head under his chest somehow. Anyway, it was just one of those, wasn't it? And it was, unfortunately, it became the sort of script for the afternoon, really, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to move on in a second. But I mean, there is one thing with that goal, and it does concern you, Mark. You put a message in saying, does the keeper come out for that? And my immediate response was no. Having watched back on the highlights this morning before we recorded, it is closer to the goal than I think it, or I thought it was at the time. I'm still not convinced it was Boo's fault or he could have come for it if he's you know, watching his front post from Bolton's cross and then getting out to it. But yeah, I did feel a little bit dismissive of you yesterday, Mark. So there you go, a little...
Well, weirdly, you watching the clip back has made you think more about it in terms of should he have come. I've watched the clip back and I completely absolve him. There's absolutely no way he's coming for that ball. And the reason I posted it in the chat group, in my defence, was a genuine question because on the day, in real time, you can't always tell and it looked like the guy hung the cross up. And when it's in the air for a while, you're thinking, well, can he come? But having seen it back, no, there's no chance. So you were absolutely spot on, Stuart. No blame attached to the goalkeeper whatsoever.
Lovely. Always what I want to hear. Right, we'll move on. And as everyone knows, I do like to do this chronologically. But for the next 40 minutes, what a crap game of football that was. So let's go straight to 43 minutes. Adam, the Aaron Rowe goal, it sort of came from nowhere. And if I'm being honest, it looks like a really good goal. But at the same time, it looks like a really scrappy goal. And I don't really think that makes sense, even as I'm saying it.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anybody doing this. I listened to Carl Robinson after the game. I listened to his interview. He said that they've tired at that point and a couple of players tired and he dragged them off at that point. And I think you could actually see that in the goal, whether they were mentally, physically tired. They were a bit sloppy and they hadn't been sloppy for probably the first 40 minutes and not particularly sloppy in the second half either. But for that 5 minutes towards the end, it was very sloppy. And I think that added to the goal. So you had them being sloppy and poor. And it was actually with some good quality, especially Aaron Rowe. So good work from Connor Thomas as well. But Aaron Rowe in particular, really, really good individual goal. Probably a level above League Two from what you'd see from a League Two point of view. I had a quick look at the XG, which is, I'm sure, is everyone's favourite word. And the expected likeliness of that to be a goal from when Aaron Rowe hit the shot was 2%. So it was actually a really, really good finish compared to maybe what it looked like live.
It actually looked better from the camera angle than it did on the day. The camera angle really catches the bend of the ball, and it's obviously pings off the far post and in. So, yeah, really, really good finish.
Okay. So after that one, like I say, Crew, they sort of came into that from nowhere. And Adam, your point about Salford maybe tiring leads us to what happens in the next minute. Steve, if the first one was maybe scrappy, whereas being a good finish, the second one, I mean, that was like watching peak Alan Shearer, that one, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. That thanks. You've nicked my reference from the pod chat, haven't you, Stu? No, it was a fantastic goal. In that we'd had a sort of a ball in the box, and it kind of fizzled out, and then Mickey chased the defender to block the clearance, and it went out to Billow on the wing there, and who composed and put a ball in that David Beckham would have been proud of, and super Alan Nevitt there on the far post arriving an absolute bullet header into the back of the net. What a goal, wonderful goal, great ball, cut out all the defenders and the keeper, and as we said, just Nevitt there having everything. He was taking the ball, any men in the way or whatever, he was having it, and it was dreamland, wasn't it? Because we were sat there looking at each other. Where's this come from? How are we where we are? Because we've been absolutely awful. And it was delirium, wasn't it, for half time?
I think it sounds ridiculous coming from a goal down to lead at half time can be a negative, but it did actually take away from the rest of the half just how bad it was. I don't think Ryan Dicker and Lee Bell are naive enough to ever fall for that themselves in the dressing room, but I did wonder if they would have made changes at half time that they perhaps didn't, because we'd gone in front. Because it's easy again, and I know I can be a bit over the top so soon after games, but I'm struggling to think of a 40 minutes this season that was as bad as that first half. I think that's probably
interesting you say that, Mark, because we were where we got a decent view of the benches down on the angle from where we sit, and Cooney was stripping off just before that first goal went in. So I wonder whether there was a plan to change it because it wasn't working. And we'll never know, I guess, but he did appear to be stripping his kit off in a way that he wouldn't if he wasn't coming on. So who knows? I don't think either of them are naive enough for it to have affected their decision, but maybe it did. These things do, don't they?
I mean, the dynamic changes when you're leading as opposed to if you're chasing a game as well. And Salford had played midweek on a boggy pitch in Bradford, which was probably the thought going into the second half. Maybe we could step it up. Maybe we could get one or two more goals. So I think it's right that the thinking maybe did change. I think he mentioned Billington's ball, but it was one of the best balls I've seen. One of the best crosses. He just almost floated it, but with almost some power to it and really low. And he was just, come on to it, head the ball. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, I don't really like digging players out, but I think that first half was really poor. And I think Billington's ball actually managed to sort of cover up the fact that I think that was probably his worst game for Crewe since coming into the first team. You know, I've been pretty positive about Lewis Billington and how he's just seemed to step up into the first team almost effortlessly. It seems like he's been around for ages, but there's a few times he dived in. He wasn't the only one. And I think I was guilty of that naivety with, you know, such a poor first half of football. We were winning. We're fourth in the league going in. I think we were second at that point on the table, and Salford are 17th. And I just felt, this is fine. We'll be fine in the second half. We've been in situations so often this season where we've had to come from behind to draw or win. Look at last week against Barrow, where, you know, the game that I choose to miss for the season turns out to be the best Crew performance of the season. And I thought, well, you know, this is just what we do. We're good enough to, you know, to take this on 3-1, 4-1, and on to next week and on to Tranmere, second in the league. Mark, it just didn't happen, did it?
No, and you make a very good point about Billow. And weirdly enough, one of the other poor performers, really poor performers, was Aaron Rowe, who disguised his performance with a great goal. I thought at half-time, well, we've managed to somehow claw our way back into the game. We've gone in front. We can't possibly come out in the second half and play as badly as we did in the first, and yet somehow we managed to.
Yeah, going back to the the changes or not changes that we thought were going to happen. And the things we said at the beginning, I think we got our shape wrong, and I think that was arguably the chance or the opportunity to change it, particularly when we had gone ahead, in that create a different problem, because we despite the two goals, we hadn't been in the game, had we? And as you said, it didn't change, did it? That at any pretty much any stage, we lost pretty much every battle all over the field, man for man. And I think I will say at this stage that they were vile, weren't they? They were as unpleasant as any team I have seen for a long, long time. Forget Steve Evans and his lot. They were worse yesterday. I just thought they were horrible. That's my part of political broadcast there, by the way, for the nice football. I thought that we got the personnel wrong, and I think that would have changed the game, at least have given them a different headache, or a headache of any, you know, of any description, to be honest.
When you say personnel wrong, though, and just give me a chance to make my point before you answer, what would you have done differently? Because they're horribly efficient at being they're very good at it. And the game, I felt, turned into a scrap. I think the point that we tried to nullify them is a good one. We didn't play our own game as much as we should have. But it became a scrap. And I think, obviously, it's easy to say now, but I think Conor O'Riordan probably deals with Matt Smith better, right? But that's, again, we can't do anything about that. And because it became a game of second balls, we missed Offord in there because his tenacity of winning it back.
Yeah, it's more the formation, I think, as much as the people. Whatever. I think it was screaming for a three at the back, and to at least get another couple of bodies picking up those second balls from midfield. I thought that what we were doing wasn't working, and so it was an opportunity to try something else. I think the goals masked the problem in many aspects, and like you though, I think all of us thought, well, we can't play as bad in the second half as we did in the first. I don't know what your thoughts, Adam, are.
There's a couple of things I would have done at halftime, and this maybe isn't even with the benefit of hindsight. This is what I was thinking at halftime. One was Courtney. I just thought we needed Courtney on. I thought set pieces are going to be crucial. And without going too far ahead, turns out that might be correct. But how would I put Courtney on? I'd have taken off Long wasn't in the game at all. Just completely the wrong game for Long. Not his fault. Just not his game. And I would have taken off Aaron Rowe, even scoring the goal, or Tracy and put Rowe on the wing, either or. Mainly because I felt we needed to pass the ball, we needed to keep the ball, we needed to keep it away from Salford. We needed them to be running around, chasing, trying to get the ball, especially after their midweek game. And having Rowe means you've got an extra attacking option, you've got a runner, but it doesn't mean you keep the ball very well. And that's something we didn't do in the second half particularly well. We were better, but we weren't great all game at keeping the ball. So having those two changes at halftime, I think, would have made a big difference.
I agree. But I also think, as well as missing Offord's tenacity and ability to tackle and win the ball in there, I felt like the game went on around Austerfield. I don't think he was in the game at all. I mean, the previous week at Barrow, he came on, but we were playing a lot better and he looked quite a handy player. I mean, you can't judge him on one appearance. I'm not for a second suggesting he's no good, but in terms of yesterday, I felt like he sort of ran round, but the ball went on. The game sort of went on around him and he didn't really at any point influence it, and to the point where I can't really sit here now and honestly say I can remember a meaningful contribution that he made.
This is the thing, Mark, I think that you've got to remember. You know, Joe White came on loan. When did he start looking good for us? October. This is a young lad that's come into a new system, a new team. We are all demanding perfect results from him, perfect performance from him, because of what we're aiming to do this year. He's given a couple of weeks. I agree. I don't think he did particularly anything yesterday. There was the first ball out wide for Rowe's goal. That was him, I think. But, you know, that's not particularly game-changing. There's about four or five different changes of possession in between that. But, yeah, it's let's see where we are in February with him. I wouldn't say he's Joe White yet, but again, Joe White didn't look like Joe White at the start of his loan spell.
No, and it's worth remembering that he's playing against a load of good old season pros as well in Salford's midfield, wasn't he? You know, they're not paying the money they are to buy mugs, are they? So it's one of those, and it comes with the territory, as you said, Stu, doesn't it? That they might not be great from the off, but I don't think he did anything wrong per se. It's just that he looked a bit lightweight, didn't he? And he was out battled, and he'll learn a lot from yesterday.
Right, let's move on then to the goal. Adam, the second goal, that is. It looked like they were convinced it should have been a penalty. Being honest, watching it on TV, there's too many bodies in the way. He might have been tripped by Offord, he might not. But it's all irrelevant because 2 minutes later, he is given the freedom of the six-yard box yet again to just poke it home with his head.
Yeah, I sometimes think of these, but you can't really tell. You think of the motive for the player. He looked, from everything I could see, that he was about to tap that ball home and he fell on the ground. And it was an open goal. If he tapped it home, it would have been a goal. So to fall on the ground at that point felt like it probably was a penalty. But like you said, it's difficult to be sure. But then you could tell it wound him up. I think he was wound up for a while afterwards. I think even though he scored, he didn't seem to mind that he scored. He just wanted that penalty. He felt like he was aggrieved by it. And I think when a player like that, like Matt Smith, is angry, worked up and ready to head a ball, and he gets a delivery like he got, there's probably, again, I think there's little we could do with the personnel we had.
Jump to start with, Adam, would be a start. There's four of them stood there watching him. Not one of them left the ground, which is the annoying bit about it. Not one of them left the ground.
I honestly think if they'd have all jumped up at the perfect time, it would have been the same situation. I think it was one of those where it was Matt Smith versus our team, who are struggling to be 6 foot tall. Again, Courtney would have been, going back to Courtney Baker Richardson, I think that could have been different. If we forget Connor, but if we had had Courtney on him, that would have been a different story, potentially marking him. But it's what it was in the end.
It was a stonewall penalty. And incidentally, I think there was one in the first half where the player was caught, and had he gone down, I think the referee would have given it. To his credit, he stayed on his feet on the edge of the box. And if you remember it, I went straight away and said, that's a pen. But, again, as I just said, the player, to his credit, tried to stay on his feet. So we got lucky twice, I think, yesterday.
I think three times. I think Osterville handballed in the first half. He put his arm out and the ball was crossed in. It was probably enough of a gap. It's one of those which would have been harsh, but in the Premier League, VAR, definitely a penalty. But
Back to the one just before the goal, absolute dead cert pen. Both of my kids are teenagers and sit stroke stand in the GRE. And both of them came out of the game and said, that was a penalty, blah, blah, blah. They cleaned him out, apparently, straight through the back of him, Smith. He was got a tap in and they went straight through the back of his heels, apparently. So, we got away with one there, but then messed it up, didn't we?
Mark, I'm going to come to you to move us on now. I know, and regular listeners to the podcast will know, that you don't like holding grudges. You sort of, things happen and you move on with it quite quickly.
Right, I'm a very person.
Yeah. So you've got the choice of two things here, Mark. Do you, A, want to talk about Salford's time wasting, or do you want to talk about my highlight of the second half? And this is showing how poor of a performance I think it was, with my highlight of the second half being Mickey's block late on when it was still 2-2.
I'll talk about Mickey's block.
Very magnanimous of you. Well done, Mark.
Phenomenal. And I didn't actually know what he'd done or how he'd done it, because the player was shaping to hit the ball and I was just waiting for the net to bulge. It looked a certain goal all day long. And there was one first half, let's not leave him out. Luke Offord made a stunning block as well in the first half that was equally as good. I mean, Mickey's Mickey. Again, he didn't have a poor game. He just didn't have a great game. I think it was a team performance across the board yesterday of perhaps too many fives and sixes out of 10, I think, rather than sevens and eights. And ultimately, that's why we're talking about a 3-2 defeat.
As I said earlier, I thought they were horrible and vile and all of those dark arts stuff, time wasting included. But I think, and I don't talk about referees because I've done hundreds of games myself and I know how difficult it is, but they played on the fact that that was the referee's first ever Football League game yesterday. And boy, did they know it. They just, every trick in the book, and he didn't get what was going on around him. He didn't clock what they were doing to him. Some of it was subtle, some of it less so. I thought there was at least one red card and possibly two yesterday that should have been handed out to their guy. The guy on the foul on the far side near the end of the first half was absolutely appalling, and the one in front of the benches wasn't much better in the second half. I thought they played the referee better than we did, as often is the case on these things. We've got pretty good at some of the dark arts stuff when we need to, but we weren't on the level that Salford and their lot were at yesterday. And it was just, it's horrible to watch, isn't it, being done to you. It's you know, that life taken out of the game and out of you. And it's, I don't know, it's dark arts, isn't it? And good luck to them. But I did think that they played the referee and his lack of experience.
Just one thing on Salford, I think that this defeat won't look as bad at the end of the season as it looks today. I think if you look at the league table, they're, I don't know, 19th maybe in the league table. They're right towards the bottom. They're not 19th in terms of today's level. They're probably a top seven pushing side in terms of how they play. They've got so much strength across the park. They've got some quality. They've got some horrible centre-backs. Matt Smith up front, they're organised. They look fairly fit. They can do a lot of things that you want from a League Two team. They're not pretty. They're horrible for a football team to watch. They time waste. They do all the stuff that winds us all up, especially as Crewe fans. They're like the opposite of us. But it doesn't mean they're not effective. It doesn't mean they're not a good team. It doesn't mean they're not a strong football team. So I think, like I said, it won't be as bad at the end of the season. They had 37 shots away at Crawley the other day. You know, that's not a sign of a bad team.
So, I've not watched Carl Robinson's interview, and nor will I. I don't like him. I'm not a fan, but he will make them a decent side. He'll do all right there.
Colour me surprised, Mark. You're not a fan.
he said they found a way to win. And he said that's all he cares about. They found a way to win, and that's probably a good way to sum them up.
Right, let's move on to the last point then. Mark, unfortunately, it is that last goal. The first two you can put down to Smith's nous know-how finishing. There's about five different chances for Crewe defenders to clear that ball before it gets to him for that third one, isn't there?
Yeah, it's just a mess. A horrible mess. I can't really add much more to that. We had chances to clear, we didn't. In all the areas that we've commended Crewe on this season about being resilient and strong and cutting out those sloppy goals, it was a flashback to the relegation season or the spell under Alex Morris. It was just one of those horrible, scabby goals. And it was, you know, I think in fairness, I've not heard Carl Robinson's interview, but if he's saying they found a win, it did feel at 2-2 like it was a kid's game of next goal wins, because I think either side could have got it, and it was always going to be, I think, a goal like that. It was a case of one side finding that way of scoring a goal, and rather than them find a way to do it, I think we handed it to them.
Yeah, I think not just him, but the Cooney, when he, that wild sort of slash at it that he makes just before Smith finally smashes it in, and it just summed it up, didn't it? It needed sort of Benny Hill music or the Keystone Cops or something putting to it, because there's two or three, four chances they've got to get shut of the ball and they don't. But the game, I think I posted our private group and said that at the time, this has got another goal in it somewhere at 70-odd minutes. But I couldn't tell you which way it was going to go. And it was like that. It was the way the season's gone. It was prime us, wasn't it, to have got it, but not yesterday. And you've just got to move on, haven't you, really? As I said, there's various things that I think not only the players but the management will learn from. that, as I said, go back to that formation, and our forwards were so isolated yesterday. Nevitt was working his backside off, and even if he won the ball, he was on his own and it was nicked off him. They got Shiloh Tracy out there. What does he do, really? He runs around a bit, and he just lacks that game intelligence, doesn't he, that I think that our own kids grow up with or instill that with them at age 10, 12, 13, whatever. But, yeah, he seems to not really be improving. You know, we have to draw a line on it, under it. We're not going to win every game, are we? And let's be honest, we're 4 from 5 and we'd have took that at Christmas.
Yeah, I'm going to finish there. I'm done talking about this game. There's a couple of things that I don't know if they need expanding on, but just a couple of things to just finish on. Every time we seem to get the opportunity to get into the top three this season, we come up with a performance like that. I just feel like this side is destined for the torture of the playoffs. You know, yesterday was a real opportunity, a home game, Mansfield, tricky away game that they didn't end up winning, Wrexham off because of the FA Cup. We could have gone second. At one stage we were, and yet we didn't. And now, you know, it looks like the playoffs for us. The second point is that is the end of, I think, one of my favourite quirky little stats, which is whenever Salford and Crewe have played each other, the home team has always won every game until yesterday. So it's disappointing that they have now done the double on us. But yeah, that is the way it is.
It's important, I think, to remember that we're on the back of 4 straight wins. And that's Bradford, Swindon, Mansfield. Who's the other one? It's gone.
Barrow,
thank you. And I think, you know, if we'd lost away at Mansfield or Barrow and then won yesterday, people would still be saying how good a season we're having. You know, it's not a disaster. It was a poor afternoon. Thankfully, we've not gone on a sort of a losing run, have we, this season? Too many times, so hopefully we can bounce back.
Other than December, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even that wasn't drastic. We drew some in there, didn't we? You know, I think it's important to remain focused and keep
absolutely.
We're still, I believe, I've not looked at the table because I don't when we lose, but I think we're still 8 points clear of the playoff places. So, you know, or falling out of the playoff places. So we're all right. We're doing all right.
We're 4 from 5, and at least we avoid the dreaded manager of the month, don't we? Probably.
Okay, next we will turn our attention to the Tranmere game coming up on Saturday. But first, we will hear from the women's team, who were away to West Chorlton and Didsbury on Sunday.
Matt, 1-0 loss away at West Dids. What are your thoughts on how that ended up?
It hurts, but I said from the start of the season that we'll judge ourselves on our performances, not our results. We feel like if we perform well over the course of a season, we might get hurt sometimes, and that happened today. We dominated the game. I mean, the second half was ridiculous. We've just been penned in their half, and their keeper's done really well. They defend really well. They've got a great defensive record, but I'm not sure we've done quite enough. We've carved open a number of clear-cut chances, and we haven't finished them. We've had a goal ruled out that we believe was onside, but it'd be totally, totally wrong of us to highlight that too much, because, you know, nobody's free of making errors, and we made some in the final third today. But as much as it hurts saying this, because I'm a very competitive person, I don't think I could be more pleased, more happy with a loss. I felt like, you know, they had a chance, took it. We had a number of chances, didn't, and that decided the game. And that happens in football.
As you said, the performance was good. The team's full of battlers, isn't it? We battled today. We kept battling. We didn't stop until the last minute. Is that something you're proud of the team and the team spirit?
Definitely. We are not scoring the goals we should be. We're inconsistent in front of goal, but we're not inconsistent in our performances. I can't remember the last time we had a bad performance. So, That's obviously pleasing. In front of goal, some weeks we look absolutely ruthless and lethal, and other weeks we're not so much. And we have to address that. There's only so long we keep saying we need to be a bit more confident and believe in ourselves. But we were very tame in the box today. I felt like we were too nice. So, just a bit deflated with it, really, because it'd probably be easier to take if we were awful and got beaten by the better side. But, yeah, it is what it is.
I mean, that's the thing. It was a fantastic performance from us. You know, we battled. Should have got something. I mean, everything was in our attacking half of the pitch. Second half. I'm a bit lost for words, to be honest. You know, there's not really much we can say.
It's times like this, mate, where we just have to go inside and say we don't want to be negative. Yeah. We can't be negative. We just can't be. You know, we've made a mistake defensively, but we've got to remember it's a kid. It's, you know, a player's made an innocent mistake and they've finished that one chance. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'd be totally right. I've got to go in there and be positive, and that's my job as a coach. You know, it's disappointing, but going in there and being upset at missed chances or being upset at this is not going to help the situation right now. What will help the situation is say we need to keep doing what we have been doing and then improve small areas. We know that this was a massive developmental season for us with so many new faces in the summer, and that's sort of been why it's when it's clicked it looks amazing, and other times it hasn't so much. In the final third, I'm speaking about every one of those front three today were new players this season. And none of them know each other, and all can play in a number of positions, so we often change it and create problems for the opponents, and it worked. We created loads of problems for them, but yeah, it's one of them. Well done to Westids. They defended brilliantly, but yeah, it hurts.
Nice one, Matt. Thank you.
Cheers, you, and cheers, mate.
Okay, Adam, just one game coming up this week. It's the shortest trip to Tranmere on Sunday. Just like Salford, it appears that they're picking up form, or form-ish, at around the wrong time for Crewe.
Yeah, they were terrible, weren't they? They were really bad when we played them at home. Probably the worst team I think I can picture us playing this season. They offered absolutely nothing going forward. We looked like we could score every time going attacking them. I don't think it'll be the same game. They picked up under Nigel Adkins. I think they're a proper team. I don't think they're going to offer the same threat that Salford offered. I don't think they're as good as Salford or the other teams we played, Mansfield, Barrow, etc. But it'll be a competitive game. But it's quite a key game because we really could do with getting that type of result. Beating teams like Tranmere now, taking up 3 points in these games against these mid-table sides, that's going to be the key to decide where we finish at the end of the season. With Mansfield faltering, there is one spot in the top three available. I think MK Dons at the moment look quite good for it. But you know, we're in the mix, I think, for that spot.
Yeah, Mark, it was an awful performance from Tranmere when they came to Gresty Road, 2-0, two red cards. I wouldn't mind watching that game again on Saturday, but Adam has just said, I don't think that's going to be the case this time round.
No, but having said that, I expect a very similar game to yesterday. I think they'll bully us. I think they'll attempt the dark arts. Obviously, they won't have Matt Smith, but I don't think it's going to be much of a different game than yesterday. And I think we're going to have to have a think this week about how we approach it in terms of where we play Mr. Offord. I suppose a lot of that will depend on who we can get in before the deadline ends. But yeah, I mean, Adam's right. All of a sudden, we need to try and go away and get 3 points to make up for yesterday. I think it's winnable, I do. I think they're a much better side than we saw at Gresty Road. But I still think it's winnable. And we haven't got a great record at Tranmere either, so it'd be nice to go there for a change and win.
Yeah, we haven't got a good record, have we, there? But they were, as both Adam and Mark have said, they were terrible, weren't they, at our place? Definitely the worst side I've seen this season. It'll be interesting, won't it? Because the window will be shut, won't it, by the time we play next? And we'll know how we're set for the rest of the season. You hope we'll have at least one in, but where and who, I guess, will depend upon plans. But I think that we just need to get Offord back into that midfield role that he's made his own in the last 8-10 games, whatever it is.
All right, Steve, I'll start with you. What's the score going to be on Saturday?
1-1, sit on the fence.
Adam?
I was going to say 1-1 as well. Okay, I'll go for 2-2.
And Mark?
Oh, I don't even know how much I truly believe this, but I'll put a positive spin. 2-1 away, win.
Lovely. Thank you, Mark. A little bit of positivity to end this section. Okay, I spoke to Rich from A Trip to the Moon podcast to get the Tranmere take on how the season's gone since October. So I'm joined now by Rich from A Trip to the Moon podcast. Hello, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, yeah, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. If we can, we'll start with the game back in October. I can't imagine you or many Tranmere fans look back at that game with any fondness. 2-0, the scoreline, and Tranmere finishing with 9 players. From an outsider looking in, it felt like what I'd been told when we spoke before about Tranmere being a bit of a mess at that moment. Was that the case for you guys on the day and, you know, in October?
Definitely. I've never been so happy to be roted into work, so I couldn't make the short journey across to Crewe. I must admit, Crewe away is normally one I go to because I have family that is my brother-in-law. He used to be a Crewe youth player, and he still goes to games now and sits in your main stand normally, looking quite smugly on as Tranmere disappoint me. October was probably the end of a very dark period for Tranmere, that fans were very frustrated. It came to an end with Ian Dawes, which a lot of fans thought was a farcical appointment. A chairman was kind of being hounded for silence because nothing had come out of the club really in a good few months. And we moved into this transitional period where Nigel Atkins was in charge. It was October, but reality of it, things weren't changing too much on the pitch, and then it started to click in November. So I know at the time, my memories of Crewe go back a little bit further to New Year's Day 2023, when for me that was when Mickey Mellon took a Tranmere side to you guys, and we played some good stuff and ended up coming away with a 1-0 defeat after what felt like a little bit of a smash and grab, and our away form was pitiful from then. So to return to Crewe in October and get nothing, it wasn't really a surprise for a lot of Tranmere fans. Looking at the match coming up to the weekend, I'd like to think a lot of Tranmere fans are feeling a hell of a lot more optimistic than they were as they set off over to Gresty Road.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look anywhere near as bleak, maybe might be the right word, as it did then. 17th in the table at the moment, a win over Grimsby on Saturday. What are the thoughts for you and for the Tranmere fans in terms of the rest of the season? Is it just making sure that you're well away from those bottom two, or is it looking to do something late in the season?
I think we're all caught in there's the slightly more positive, which I'm known as being mentally positive, and I'm very much a pro Palios fan, which I know frustrates a lot of Tranmere fans who the anarchy kind of side of a little bit more negativity and not liking the ownership of the club is got quite a movement and support as well. But I think if you look at this season now, and I think if you look at what Nigel's done with the players, it feels like they've thrown the league table out the window. They've got one eye looking up the table, which is the big change. We were looking at that trapdoor, and we were looking at the drop into what is known by the Tranmere fans as the bin league. We've been there, we've done that. We had a rather miraculous double bounce out of it, and it was a fantastic chapter to enjoy watching football. But we do not want to head down to the doldrums of the attendances of away fans and the farcical away days that sometimes, you know, driving to Dover and getting the game called off in the car park, all that sort of stuff. So we were petrified about that drop. The luck is definitely more up the table. But I feel like the club itself, it feels like it's thrown away the league table. They're going out to win every game. You saw it at Grimsby, a rather industrial kind of away performance. We will quite happily let teams have the ball and try and break us down. Away from home, we've been caught a couple of times with a couple of narrow defeats recently, but our away form on the whole is a lot better since those dark days of August, September, October. But the reality of it is at Prenton Park, when we get a little bit of momentum, the wing play, Rob Apter has been a revelation signing on loan. Everyone in the division seems to be talking about him and quite worried about what he can do, and Grimsby saw at their peril on Saturday. He got a very good goal there, and he got the cross, the assist for the own goal that won us the game. But you go back to New Year's Day, I think the last good performance we had at home, we didn't hit our levels against Milton Keynes Dons at home. So looking at Saturday against yourselves, if we can get a performance like we played against Notts County, this division, it doesn't matter who we play, we'll give them a game, and we'll come up. You know, we'll come up with a, in my opinion, hopefully a positive result against you guys. But I think to say that we're looking at playoffs is a bit of a stretch. To say that we're worried about relegation is a bit of a stretch. So it kind of feels like we're just going out to win every game and see where we end up.
So by the time we play on Saturday, the transfer window will have closed. Has there been much movement for you guys during January? Is there more movement expected before it does close?
Definitely not. It's very much a status quo with where we were on the on New Year's Day against Notts County, which to some Tranmere fans is disappointing. Others, I suppose, you look at it, well, we lost Rob Apter back to Blackpool at the end of the loan. He's been really a standout player for us, so everyone was disappointed that he left. There was a return of Rob Apter as well, using Southern fan groups intervention as well, with some funds intervening and helping to fund the deal from the Southern Super White Army, which a lot of people's eyebrows, because Tranmere have just released their accounts. We're not in bad shape, but we did lose money. There's a lot of talk of the owner seeking investment, whether that investment means he sells the club on, or whether that means that he gets a shot in the arm to look at stadium redevelopment and moving the club in the long term. But it very much feels like, a status quo. Nigel seems to be quite happy with what he's got, and he has a squad of 32 players, so we've got a big squad. He's just extended 5 contracts with youth players that were on the fringes and not really featured. And I suppose if it was a look at what the rest of the window has to play out for us, if he didn't want those players, he would have released them. If he didn't want that budget to be spent there and wanted to spend it on someone else, he would have released them. He keeps saying that if anyone comes in, it's going to be someone that's going to move us forward and add quality. We don't need quantity. So I'll be honest, knowing that we aren't looking like we've got loads of cash, and knowing that quality normally costs cash, unless something miraculous happens, I can't see us adding a massive name to our challenge for this season. I think this feels like a settle with what we've got, and let's see how far we can go up this year, up the table. If we have a real silly run, like Stockport had a 10-11 game winning streak, we could maybe knock on the doors of the playoffs. But really, let's get some solid foundations in for next season. That's the feeling.
Okay, so I've got one last question for you, Rich. It sounds a lot more positive than last time we played. You are at home. What's the score going to be when we play on Saturday?
You've got Elliot Nevitt. Tranmere have an uncanny knack. Like most football clubs, of when players leave, they'll always have a good game against and score. So I've got no doubt that you will score. It's going to come down to, I think, how well you can cope with a Tranmere going forward with real momentum. With the wide trick players we've got in Kieran Morris and Rob Apter, you've got to keep a lot of players quiet to stop Tranmere scoring these days. So Kieran Morris is on 9 goals. Connor Jennings, I think he's on 9 goals. You've got Rob Apter, who's creeping up. I think he's on 5 or 6. And we've got goals even coming from centre-halves with Tom Davis. And to be fair, Jordan Turnbull hasn't scored for a while. So I think there'll be both teams will score. I would say that I do fancy a home win for Tranmere. Your frailty at the weekend against a rebuffed Salford, I think that could leave a little bit of mental scarring. Personally as well, as I said, I'd love to see Elliot Nevitt do well, and I like that you guys seem to be liking him. It was a very strange ending at Tranmere, and it just, I'd like to think that the podcast that I feature on with Matt, he'll come on one day and explain what went wrong, because he went from a position of being kind of Roy the Rovers local lad that was doing well for us to falling right out of favour, and he literally couldn't hit the back end of a donkey with a banjo. So he certainly found that scoring form that he had for us in earlier days, and looks a threat. I'd like to think, as I said, Tranmere, unfortunately for you guys, I think we'll just have enough on the day to beat you, which proves once again this League Two is a bit mental, because why would you have someone sat there talking about a 17th place team be confident in beating a team that looks good value for chasing the playoffs?
Right then, just to finish off this week, a couple of things. Our last man standing has now officially kicked off again with our rollover. The best any of us managed to do the first time round was week two. So we are hoping to get somebody at least that picks two winners and makes it into week three this time round. We had, as well as a few people on this call, you know, a fairly well-known ITV racing commentator, a fairly well-known EFL pundit from quite a successful EFL podcast that I know Adam has been in contact with about their praise for Crewe recently, amongst other people. They both, along with me, crashed out again at the first hurdle. My success rate is now 2 picks, 2 times eliminated, so I might knock on the head personally, especially when my own wife is beating me and making it into week two. Mark, you feel my pain? We both went for Crewe this week. Turned out to be the wrong choice.
Yeah, it's a stupid game anyway.
Okay, moving on.
Never bet on the Alex is your takeaway, isn't it?
Moving on. 2 weeks ago, when I was last on, I asked people to find the map Tootle podcast, as he was only a few listens away, a couple of listens, I think, away from becoming our latest 4-digit podcast. That worked. He even surpassed Luke Varney. So I do think there's people out there listening to us now that have just found us. So the next one that I want to get to over 1,000 listens is the original Graham McGarry interview. That one's a bit further away. It's 17 shy. So if you've not turned in yet, please do and search May 2021. That is essentially when that came out. If you are new and you don't know about the number of X-Player pods, we've done a lot. So please do scroll up in your feeds. You might find someone you weren't aware we've spoken to. I think one of the earliest ones that we ever did was sitting down with two of my absolute heroes from when I was a kid, Sean Smith and Steve McCauley. So if you've not heard that one, then please do. Neil Baker was also very, very good to listen to. Last thing from me. We had quite a lot of articles go up on the website this week. Some that people were interested in. I also wrote one. You know, if you are someone that wants to get involved, then please do get in touch with me or Russ, even if it's just to write your version of the what Crewe means to me. It was an absolute joy reading Chris's this week, Chris Thompson. But yeah, please do get in touch so we can carry on with that. With that, I think I'm going to wrap up today. So Mark, Adam, Steve, thank you so much for jumping on today.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Jude.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, as ever, for listening. We will be back next week to discuss the Tranmere game. Until then, goodbye. Blue Moon.